Hello and welcome to 1 Inch Pie Scary Podcast. This is Kirsty Sayer. It is October 7th, 2022, and I hope that you are doing well, darlings. I've missed you. I think it's been a couple of weeks, which kind of gives you the sense of how this last week has been for me. It's gone very, very quickly. I've been very busy and preoccupied, but I have definitely been excited to get back on the podcast. To talk to you about a couple of things that have come up that I feel have been so informative to me, and I really hope are interesting and helpful to you too. But first of all, I hope you're doing well. Let us take a breath together, darlings, and center ourselves. I have had, like I said, I've had a busy week with lots of things going on. And so it feels good to just sort of sit down and reflect a little bit on what has come up. And I wanted to start by telling you about an experience which I personally found very fascinating, and I hope that you will find interesting and will maybe give you some insight of your own at some point in your life. So recently, as you may know if you listen to past episode, I've been on a painting redecorating of my house kick. It has needed it for a while, and we've got to the point that I can no longer deny that the living room is in dire need of a paint job. And I shouldn't say can no longer deny, because I have wanted the living room to be repainted since we initially painted it, or shortly thereafter, only because it was painted, or so I thought, for sale of the house, which never did actually turn out happening. We didn't put our house on the market as we had intended to when we went to South Africa in 2015. We ended up coming back and being grateful that we hadn't put our house on the market, because we continue to live in it to this very day. But I didn't ever like the paint job, and I wanted it repainted, and now I can very much justify that because it's looking extremely shabby. So one would think I'd be very excited about this, since I tend to enjoy this creative endeavor, but I was not. I felt emotionally very blocked, and there was a weird, scary feeling deep in my heart every single time I anticipated going and getting paint. And I started to have these like weird mental blocks about the color and like really over researching it, which is very not me. I tend to just really like what I like. And I just couldn't figure it out, and I didn't know what to do. And I was so embarrassed and ashamed by how much bandwidth the concept, just the concept of repainting the living room was occupying for me, and how it was like really feeling emotionally overwhelming and scary. And I didn't want to talk to anybody about it because it was such a champagne problem. And I was like, you have officially now entered like your middle-aged suburban housewife like stage. I was starting to feel like if you've ever watched the Gilmore Girls, I was starting to feel like the not rich version of Lorelai's mom, where she becomes so fixated about like little things that don't seem to matter to other people who are living bigger lives. I've been watching the Gilmore Girls lately, so she just came to mind, and I was like shaming myself for the fact that I felt emotionally insecure and like weirdly triggered every single time I thought about just going and getting a freaking gallon of paint. It was so embarrassing. And so it was like this little loop of like, go get the paint. But no, I feel insecure and almost scared, and I don't know why. Well, that's freaking weird. Like, don't tell anybody about it, because that's embarrassing and lame. Okay, but that's not making me feel any better. Now I'm embarrassing and lame, and I still feel weird about getting the paint. And so it was just a strange thing. And I also had a lot of other bigger stuff going on, like much more, engaging things to be concerned about. And so I was like rolling my eyes at myself, but still not being able to deny that in the pit of my stomach, I didn't feel good about it, and I couldn't figure it out. So Eventually, one sunny day, last week, when I was feeling very stable and not worried about anything, I went and got the paint, at least a sample, and it was a fully neutral experience. And like I said, I was having a great day, and there were no pressing concerns, and I was feeling very like chill. And I walked out into the parking lot after procuring this paint, and suddenly I felt an overwhelming sense of anxiety, like bordering on an actual panic attack, which is not something that I experience frequently. It is something that is quite rare for me. And so I was like, damn, damn, right? It like hit like a ton of bricks just out of nowhere. And I was like, bro, this is intense. What the hell? Where did this free floating cloud of panic come from that has enveloped me entirely to the point that when I'm driving home, I'm like shallowly breathing and I'm talking myself down and being like, do your breath work. And then I'm going through my little tool of coping mechanisms where I'm like first asking myself, like, have you had enough to drink? Have you had enough to eat? And so I determined no, you haven't had enough to drink. You're dehydrated, hence your anxiety. Because as we know, dehydration can definitely trigger anxiety because our bodies are trying to help us to stay alive. And so I was like, go and chug some water and have a little snack and all will be well. Well, it wasn't really well, but of course it did help. And I was like, ah, you know what? You got to go for a walk. You need some exercise. Just go for a walk in the woods and things will be better. And they weren't entirely better, but they were. But I'd gone from like a zero sense of anxiety to now a manageable but low level buzzing. Like it was at like a 3 or 4. And I was like, this is a bummer. I wonder what that's about. But I managed to put it away, and the next day I'm strolling through my house and I'm like, damn, this living room though. I fully hate this paint color and it's gotta go, and I just gotta get on this thing. I decided that the sample I chose was all wrong, and I'm trying to get up the gumption to go back to the store to get a new paint color. But I'm remembering how bad that felt yesterday, right? I'm remembering that I felt an enormous amount of anxiety, and so I'm sort of putting it off. I'm like finding other things to do, as we do, right? When we associate something with anxiety. And I walk into the dining room, and suddenly it hits me, wow, I have painted this dining room far more recently than the living room was painted, and I chose that color. That color was for me and my family to experience, not just to sell this house. And my word, it's very similar to the initial color. So I wonder why I hated that initial color so much. Then I go into my kitchen and I'm like, I'm damn sure I chose this color and I really like this color. And it is also not far off the living room color. So what is my deal? And then suddenly the penny drops. I have this total flashback memory to standing in my living room with my painters and them telling me that I needed to go and get this particular sheen of paint and how many gallons, and me saying, sure, I'll do it, and rushing off and, hopping in my car, thinking about a million things, and then having a car accident. And it was in the parking lot of the place that I had the panic last week. And that is a parking lot that I visited billions of times since. My gym is in that parking lot. I shop there often. I do not experience anxiety there anymore at all. Maybe I did initially the first few weeks after the accident, but I certainly haven't felt it for a really long time. And then I realized it is completely all of this was associated with the painting of the living room. And that is how specific a trigger can be. And it is crazy to me that all this time I really disliked the color of the walls because I also associated it with that accident. And not just with that accident. Look, that accident was a significant event. I totaled our car, which nobody was happy about because it was new. And I was fairly badly injured. I wasn't critically injured, but I was injured enough that I was in physical therapy for a long time. It was traumatic. It was awful. Like it wasn't a good time at all. It was an objectively traumatic event. And I do remember now that after that event, the ambulance came and the fire engine came and everything, and I told the ambulance, no, I'm fine. I was still very much in shock, but I think they did an assessment. I don't really remember enough to say, okay, are you sure you're going to go to the doctor though? And I was like, yes, I'm sure. And I called a friend to get me, and I remember sitting in her car and insisting I have to go and get the living room paint because the painters are there waiting. And there's nothing else they can do if I don't bring the paint, and I'm right here next to the paint store. So it was really all wrapped up, right? I was before the accident focused on the paint, after the accident focused on the paint. And I remember my friend just sort of staring at me, like saying, seriously, you want to go into Home Depot like that, looking the way you do now? And me looking down at myself and like just acknowledging that I had blood on me and I was injured and my clothes were all wrecked and I didn't know where my shoes were, and being like, through the haze of the shock going, yeah, now things are starting to hurt. Maybe I don't think I can. I don't know if I can walk in there and like get the paint, and just sort of processing all those things, which I hadn't thought of any of this up until that memory. And of course, now it doesn't seem as silly to me that I had a weird mental block, that I was procrastinating it, that I felt little and scared, like a little scared child, whenever I thought about going and getting. And it wasn't about getting the wrong paint color. It wasn't about the job being messy and tedious and disruptive. It was because my psyche had associated living room painting with trauma, physical and emotional. And the fact that, that accident then sort of like ushered in the era of ick. I had experienced a lot of other physical issues shortly thereafter that had led to tons of physical pain for me. I had major mouth surgery and all sorts of stuff, and long-term pain in my mouth. And anybody who knows, pain in your jaw and your mouth is sort of all-encompassing. It's a big deal. It was for me. It was in and of itself very traumatic, followed by going to South Africa, which was extremely traumatic, followed by coming home and, eventually getting into therapy, which in and of itself was a lot, right? It ushered in this whole era of ickiness. And it is very understandable then that my deep subconscious and my body was having this response, like, are we going to open up that same era again? Is this going to bring about pain and misery and discomfort and like emotional like upheaval and chaos? So when we're having weird, uncomfortable feelings in our body, I think it's really important for us to not shame ourselves for it. I talk about this all the time, and there I was, the one doing it. It's so much more helpful if we just become curious about it. Become curious with your triggers. Become friendly towards your triggers. Because shaming ourselves for feeling emotionally activated over something seemingly small and insignificant is only going to create a vicious cycle with that. Piling on shame and saying, wow, how embarrassing and petty are you? Or how immature and lame are you? Or un. Oh, all, I'm just saying all the things that I've said about myself. How much lack of resilience do you have that this thing makes you like feel so uncertain and wanting reassurance from other people, and like a little kid, like what's up? Instead of going, wow, okay, so something about this pain, huh? Something about this pain, and putting on my therapist hat and going, let's sit down with this girl. Let's unpack this. This is fascinating stuff. This is going to lead to a breakthrough. I can just tell. I could have probably saved myself a couple weeks of low key discomfort, and then definitely a day of extreme discomfort. And the issue with the ignoring of it and not unpacking the trigger for what it was that it can so easily also attached to other things. And I'll give you an example of that. So when I came home and I'd addressed the first two things, I'd had some water and I had my my little snack and I'd resolved to go for a walk later, I decided to check my email while I was still in this activated, anxious state. And I got a message from the grad school that I'd applied to, and it told me that I'd made it through to another round, and I'd jump through sufficient hoops, and the congratulations, and you can, now schedule the interview, which is the final stage, if you make it through the first few. And so I was like, damn, that's an accomplishment, right? That's exciting. And honestly, I fully believe that I would have read that email with unabated excitement and satisfaction if I had not had that anxiety attack just, half an hour or 15 minutes earlier. But what happened was that even with the full awareness of the fact that I was anxious prior to opening that email, it did attach to that thing. And so while I was preparing for the interview, I had this unnecessary background hum of anxiety that I don't think I would have introduced to that experience if I hadn't been so anxious earlier on. And I was so anxious earlier on because I had an unresolved traumatic issue that I wasn't being patient and compassionate with myself over, and I wasn't curious, and I wasn't treating myself with empathy and reassuring the inner child who was scared and stressed out that this was another time and another place, and that all those things had been resolved, and I was going to drive carefully, and I was not going to have an accident, and stuff like that. So it can really, this is how easily it can affect your life in ways that it doesn't necessarily have to. Other ways in which unresolved trauma has affected my life is, in my relationships, where I've lashed out at others because I'm so exhausted from under the surface dealing with unresolved trauma. And that so many other people probably can relate to that, where they just do not have the coping resources anymore, or you're just fully exhausted and you can't show up in your life because you are dealing with, you're replaying in your subconscious the same trauma over and over and over again. So every single time I was an acknowledging that I needed to paint or considering painting my living room, there was a part of my brain that was replaying that accident and everything that came after it. And that is a draining experience that will take up so much bandwidth, even if you're not aware of it. It doesn't matter if your conscious mind is not aware of it. It is still running hard in the background and taking up energy. Think about if you've got zillions of windows open on your computer. Eventually, the computer is like, okay, I can't do this anymore, and it will freeze up, and you have to restart, right? Same thing with your brain. So that's that. That's your little reminder to not shame yourself, to acknowledge your triggers, to make friends with your triggers. Triggers are not your foes, they are information. Just like when you put your foot into the bath and you feel the water is really, really hot on your toe, that's uncomfortable and sore, but you don't get mad at your toe for reading that and giving your body the information. You're like, thank God. And you put you put some cold water. I'm just thinking, this just shows how my brain works because I'm like picturing the white bottom of my bath as I do it. But it's like you put some cold water into the bath and stabilize it and make it safe and warm so it's a good experience when you get in, right? It's the same as when you put your fingers on a hot stove, you quickly recoil. You're not like, oh damn, why do my fingers have to be so like freaking nervy and like sensitive? Lame fingers. You're so stupid. Why can't you just be tougher? No, you're like, thanks, body, for letting me know that the stove is hot so I don't get third degree burns and you lose the use of my hands. So why are we this way about our triggers, our mental triggers? Why are we so impatient and judgmental of ourselves when we are being given very helpful information that will allow us to close the loop of past traumas Because that is what triggers do. They invite us to look at what has not yet been resolved. Everybody in their lives experiences trauma, all of us, without exception. And a lot of the time, we experience trauma, like whether it's big or small, and we are able to properly resolve it. We can close the circuit of that trauma by like dealing with it and reassuring ourselves that like it is dealt with, right? We are now safe. We are now okay. The future is not like insecure. We have secured that particular threat and it is dealt with and we've closed the door on it. And that happens with a lot of trauma. Otherwise, we would all constantly be quivering wrecks. And that's why some people are quivering wrecks because so many things happened to them, and I have been that quivering wreck because so many different things happened that were never addressed, and that circuit of trauma has not been resolved. So this is why, whenever we are offered the gift of a trigger, look at it as a gift. Look at it as so much of an opportunity to close a circuit and therefore to close that particular tab and save the energy for your current life, for the life that you want to lead now, today, and in the future, so that it does not have to be trauma informed anymore. It can just be what it is right in the future. Triggers are the opportunity to close trauma loops, and once you've closed them, wow, huge amounts of energy are freed up. Moving on to the next thing. The interview that I had, I think that is something that's cool to discuss, just in terms of how I was a couple of months ago, and how I was able to do that. And I'll explain. So a couple of months ago, if you have been following this podcast, you will know that I talked about the hot mess summer, right? That I was super not myself, that I was, or maybe, I was partially myself, but I was in a very activated version of myself. I had ignored all the triggers, right? I had ignored them to the point that my body was like, fine, disassociate. If you're not going to listen to your triggers and address them, what do we do next? Disassociate. That's our next survival mechanism. I don't know why I just launched into an awkward little song there. Maybe I've been looking at too much TikTok. I think that's what it is because there's a trend on TikTok now where people tell long traumatic stories and they do it in rhythm but off rhythm. It's very campy and I absolutely love it, but other people find it incredibly annoying. So if you're in the latter group, I'm very sorry. But that's what I did. I had plenty of opportunities to acknowledge that I was being fully triggered for lots of different reasons, and I didn't. I just disassociated eventually. Because bodies are smart and brilliant and fully about protecting us, and our psyches are just as good. And so if we refuse to acknowledge stuff, they'll just disassociate for as long as they can, and then when they can't like stave the flood off that way anymore, eventually the dam breaks and then we must deal with it. And it's very, very messy and inconvenient and unfortunate when that happens. But more often than not, that's how it has to happen because we just don't know enough, right? We don't know enough. And our society is not really set up for us to examine each trigger as it comes up. We don't give ourselves enough grace or time or resources to enable us to do that, which is unfortunate and sad. And that's why I'm here, trying my best to offer you at least some resources and to encourage you to give yourself that grace. But anyway, I was a mess. I covered that fairly thoroughly and I was feeling so, so, so lost and so incapable. Is that a word? Incapable. I was feeling completely terrified and empty, and I would say everything I did from that point on was just purely motivated by a sense of panic and fear. And that is not necessarily a good place to come from when you are embarking on something as big as, grad school. It takes a lot of energy, and you've got to want to do it for the right reasons. I really do believe that. And so I'm still sort of shocked at the fact that I was in such a very messy, messy state when I decided to do this thing, because that's not like me, especially not in recent years. In recent years, I've really recognized the value of when you're tired, rest, and when you're in a state of mental unwellness, don't then introduce other things that are going to be extremely emotionally and mentally taxing, which everybody knows grad school and post-grad school is about, right? It's a lot. And so I'm still a little bit unsure as to how something wiggled through those very strong boundaries that I've delivered, that I've developed. But it did. I think it was just there had to be a voice of inner knowing in there somewhere that I recognized that there was a mature voice that was saying to me, "Listen, girl, you may feel very gross right now, but just do this one thing, right? Just do this one thing, and you're going to start to feel better." And I do believe that in the midst of all that noise and chaos, there was a alarm clock kind of voice. And you know, alarm clocks are not something that most of us feel fondly about, but they do serve a purpose. We set them, you know, when we're in our adult self, we set alarms for ourselves because we know that if we do, you know, just sleep for as long as we want, we're not going to be happy with the outcome. And our morning self cannot be trusted, right, to make decisions that the decisions that our adult evening self will make. Our morning self is confused and it's bewildered and it's tired and it feels overwhelmed and it's just going to take the path of least resistance. So that's why we set alarms. And we don't appreciate the alarm in the morning. We hate the alarm. We're very angry at our adult self for setting the alarm, but we tend to sort of obey the alarm more often than not. And then as the day goes on, we're grateful that we did because we made it to that appointment. We made it to that event. We have maintained relationships. We still have a job. We can go on surviving in this capitalist hellscape. So we are very grateful. I'm not very grateful, maybe grudgingly grateful, and then we go ahead and set the alarm again. So, all that to say that I think I recognized whatever voice was telling me, "Listen, girl, I know you feel very fucking insecure right now and like you couldn't feel worse or less prepared for the rigors of grad school. Just let's do an application. Let's just apply. Let's just start there. How about we just start there so that we can get out of whatever funk this is in because it's going to spiral to a scarier place." And I do believe that that's what the people who love me most were also seeing. That they were like, "Damn, she's not in good shape. Not at all." However, we've seen this film before and we didn't like the ending, to quote the great Taylor Swift. We saw that if she was in this state and then she didn't do anything, she would end up in a catatonic suicidal depression. And we don't want that. So rather, let's take this very messy, weeping, insecure, hysterical human and give her a job to do and see what that does. And fortunately, that gamble played off. Now, if you yourself are currently the hysterical, overwhelmed, deeply insecure human, I don't want to say that this is the path that you should take necessarily. It's not one that I'm going to just recommend wholesale. Maybe this is your moment to go, I definitely need to rest. I need to take off a decade and really clear off my plate and stop adding more things to it. That is the path for me because let me tell you guys, going to grad school is not going to increase your value of at all. And so if you're like doing it because you somehow don't think that you're valuable enough, or you're doing it to please somebody else, or to prove your worth to other people, or to get validation, nothing you do physically is going to do that. You are already at peak value. Like, it's not going to change, it's not going to improve, nothing you do. Not getting a master's, nor a PhD, nor getting the Nobel Prize is going to increase your value. Yes, it may increase your validation, but in all likelihood, the validation from the people that you're seeking it, if you haven't already received it for just being who you are, it's never going to come. I'm super sorry to tell you. I've been there, done that, tried it. It didn't work out. It only led to worse sadness and desperation when I'd done something that was really hard in order to get the validation from somebody and they still didn't give it. It made me feel worse, like infinitely worse. So those are the caveats I want to give you. Like, it's not gonna scratch that itch. It's not going to suddenly transform your life from unhappy to happy to mobilize and do any one single thing. You've got to, of course, address the underlying motivations for doing something. However, I will also say that remaining stagnant and being nagged by something that you personally feel that you should be doing, that you do in your heart feel is kind of your purpose and your mission, or that you secretly think you'd be really good at, or that you know that you have more in you. You do have that potential to do that, but your potential is scaring the shit out of you. And because it seems like it's going to demand a whole bunch from you, then I would say consider doing the first step towards the thing. I would say that. If something's nagging you and it's your potential and then you're getting freaked out because you feel like you have to do the whole thing and you have to do it perfectly, and you're looking at every single solitary step, and that is just short-circuiting your brain, and it makes you want to cry, or it is making you cry, or pull the covers over your head and disassociate because it is such an exhausting prospect. Stop and only do the first thing towards it. Make a performative gesture towards getting that thing done. And that's what I decided to do. I was like, okay, cool, like, I'm gonna do one thing. I'm gonna apply. It's and then maybe not even go. I'm just gonna apply. I'm gonna just do the thing as an activity. As an activity. Oops. My microphone just fell over. Just it was so overwhelmed by the emotion in that. But yeah, start to look at things as an activity rather than as a means to an end. Look at things. This is my recommendation for doing something huge that's overwhelming, is especially if you're neuro atypical like me, if you have something like ADHD, which tends to make us look at things in a zillion different like tasks, and those tasks all seem overwhelming, so we're just going to shut the whole thing down, and then we're going to feel unfulfilled and guilty, and our potential is going to keep knocking on the door and scaring us. And we're just living in a state of like freeze. I would say look at the first task as just an activity to do, and that it isn't an, not a means to an end, it is the end itself. And it the end is proving to yourself that you can do the first thing, just the first thing, that you can bust out of the state of inertia and just do the first thing. That's it. That's it. That's all that's going to be asked of you. And I did a few things along the lines of that. I really, really embraced the path of least resistance. I was like, I'm going to, wait for the right university or institution to manifest itself to me. And this doesn't sound as crazy or like, what's the word? Kooky as it seems, because I know that our phones listen to us so much. And I often get ads for universities on my phone because I've discussed this so much in person and on, in writing, that I was very confident that I would be either emailed or see an ad. And I would be able to narrow down my search. Let me explain why. Because at the beginning of my state of like freak out during hot mess summer, I was like, okay, I'm gonna do this as if I am like the most ambitious Harvard wannabe ever. I'm gonna get the manual that compares every single learning institution in the world. I'm going to get that manual. In fact, I subscribed to that thing. Aaron, if you're listening to this, we need to find that subscription and cancel it because I don't know what it's called and I also don't want to keep paying for it. But that's too much, you guys. If you are like me, that's way too much information. It's information you do not need. It is overwhelming, and I realized that very quickly. So, none of that. I was like, let's just wait to see what manifests, and if something, crosses my radar that seems like it's a good fit, then we will proceed. And there's a lot of things that have to be a good fit for it. It has to be the right kind of it just got to hit right, man. You got to be able to go there or at least go online. You've got to, it's got to have a program that looks good and appeals to you for all sorts of different reasons. So, do your thing, universe. Let's go. I'm willing to do this. So, like, could you participate? And it did. The universe was like, absolutely, sure, we've been waiting. So then I got. Immediately started getting all the ads, and I investigated a few. A few were immediately ruled out just because of timing. Others were ruled out because of geography. But I really didn't examine a whole bunch of them. Within, a week, I had narrowed down the place to one. Now, I know this sounds insane, and I very well may not get into that one place, at which point I will proceed with other applications, and that's just how it's going to have to be. But I was like, look, I'm going to do one application, see how it goes, see if I have any energy left over, any bandwidth after that. It turns out I didn't at that time. I do now if necessary, but I didn't at that time. And so I just did that application and I asked for my husband's assistance in helping me with the barriers to task initiation because the ADHD is very real. And task initiation is a big deal. And if we're faced with too many barriers, like a printer being out of ink, and then you have to go and you have to like figure out what ink the computer, the printer needs, and then you got to go to the store and remember that type, and then you got to buy it, and then come back and realize it was the wrong type, it was just one number off, and then you got to go back and return that, and then that's never going to happen, right? So I was just like, hey, could you print out the forms so that I can like peruse them in a way that makes sense to my brain? I like to have things in my actual hot little hand that I can highlight, old school. And so he did that. And then, other things like that, other barriers to entry. Could you please give me like this block of time with nobody in the house so I can just buckle down? And he did that. So I did ask for assistance. And I also made it a really small, comparatively very small, confined task with an end date. I had a certain amount of time to do it within that I had that I could apply with a fee waiver, and that was super helpful to me because it helps to have these soft deadlines. People with neurodivergence really like a deadline. They don't like it at the time, but it helps. It really helps with task initiation and follow through. When it's like, I should apply to grad school, but I can do it any time within a 6-month period. Suddenly that 6-month period comes and goes, and we are like, wait, I was gonna go to grad school this year. But this one had a very urgent, like, still time manageable, but it was like it was gonna end. And then if it ended, yes, I could still apply, but then I was gonna have to pay. So that helped. It really did help. All of this stuff made the whole thing feel way less chaotic and huge and multi, tasking, was just leveled out. It really did level out my anxiety levels to do that. And then I celebrated each stage. Oh, I have a kid that's home, so I will continue with this later. Okay, I'm back, and I have to be perfectly honest, completely lost track of what I was saying when I was interrupted, but I'm glad I was interrupted because I am almost always repeating myself and beating a dead horse, and I'm always happy to see my kids. So I'm just gonna go on to the next topic. Okay. It was time for a break anyway, but just in case, let me sum it up. It's that if you're having a hard time with a big task, don't just make it up into a smaller task. Make the whole point of the big thing, just trying small little parts of it. Not even trying the whole of it in its entirety. Just put it in your mind that the initiation of the task is an exercise in and of itself, and that is something that you can enjoy and focus on completely without constantly, ruminating about what else comes next. That's always very, very overwhelming for me. It's something that I really do struggle with. And my son Gabe, actually, who's really effective and manages to get a lot done and also seems to be able to maintain his emotional equilibrium. When he does it, he just looked at me in wonder one day when I was describing everything that needed to be done in a day, and he just said, "That's not how I think about things." And I was like, "Do tell." And he's like, "Oops, there goes my mic again. Things are very much topsy-turvy in this podcast episode, but that is fine. We're going to keep it real and authentic over here." He said, "The way I think about things is I have to do this thing next, and that's then all I think about until I've done the thing." And I'm sure, he keeps in mind the other parts of his day, but he doesn't tend to ruminate on huge chains of events, because that in and of itself takes up a ton of energy, just keeping it sort of in the forefront of our brain and letting it roam around while we're trying to get a task done is exhausting and stressful and incredibly overwhelming. So I know it's very easy for somebody who is neurotypical to tell somebody like me, just don't do it that way. But I'm going to give you another tip. It is possible for short periods of time to channel another person. You can make it into a game. And in fact, it is just one of my many hacks that I use. It doesn't work all the time as a day-to-day thing. I can't be like, "Oh, okay, from now on, I'm just going to channel a neurotypical person like in everything I do at all times." That's not how it works, nor should it, because I value the fact that my brain is different and I get a lot of advantages from that. But for this task, I was like, I am going to give myself permission to just focus on this task until it's done and not think beyond it and not think beyond the outcome of completing this task as being enough and being a win. So I don't have to think about the other things. I don't have to worry about them. I don't have to, stress about other people's opinions or, what happens if after this task and then 25 other things that are entailed in getting it all done that I fail, and then what will people think of me, and then what will I do next with my life? That is too much, right? Too much. Keep it narrow. So for this particular period of time while I'm completing this task, I'm going to keep reminding myself to channel Gabe and just be like, "This task. I'm going to complete this task and I'm going to complete it to the best of my ability and remain fully focused." And I'll speak for ADHD people. We do have a wonderful ability to hyper focus on something. And so giving yourself permission to hyper focus on just one thing is actually kind of a treat. It really is. Once you have, erased all the extraneous stuff from your brain, given yourself permission to do that, or at least to put it on the back burner, it is a wonderful treat to just be able to focus on one thing. So, like I was saying before the break, asking for help or setting up your life so that task initiation barriers are removed as much as possible is great. And then also channeling the ability to hyper focus and making it your own, which we are really quite good at when we have the opportunity, is a gift. So let's go for it. If you've got something huge on your mind or in your heart that you want to do, do the first thing and tell yourself that the first bite of it is the whole meal, if necessary. And then see how you feel. Maybe you don't want to continue after the first bite. That is just fine. Okay, and we can apply that to any overwhelming task. In fact, I'm going to do that when I'm finished recording with restoring my house to order, which is very overwhelming right now because we've got the whole fall clothing swap when fall is like here and it's being all cold, but then all of a sudden it'll bust out like a 75 degree day and you're like, wait, I don't want to be wearing a sweater and boots, and so I need to keep all the clothes right here because I have tiny Victorian closets. You get my drift. It's a scene in this house. Plus, I'm busy painting, and my sister is visiting for the first time in like 7 years or something, on Sunday, and I'm in chaos. So that could easily become overwhelming, but I'm just going to do one thing at a time and see if I feel like going on because I know that my sister is not coming to inspect my house. So that is just it's a transferable skill that we can all work on and use it in our daily lives. And I want to leave you on this topic anyway with a wonderful quote. I have it scribbled down on a piece of notebook paper that I wrote on, and it was in my car. So I have no idea where I got this quote. I cannot credit it to anyone. It's possible I've used this quote in a freaking podcast episode before and forgotten it. But if I did, I don't care because it's that good. And it was surrender to your own mediocrity. Is that nice? Is that kind? Yes, it is. For people like me, and possibly people like you who may be listening, you're okay to just do a good enough job. You don't have to wait until every single thing is lined up perfectly in order for you to make your best possible attempt at the thing. You don't. The people who have done a lot of things in the world have engaged in the process rather than the outcome. Always. They are always fully engaged in the process rather than psyching themselves out with the outcome. And the more sort of delusions of grandeur that you might have about how the outcome is supposed to be, the less likely you are to embark upon it. And that's a tragedy because if you are expecting and only accepting an incredibly successful outcome in everything that you do, you will really psych yourself out a lot of the time into just not doing it at all. And that's just not a life well lived. It's a frustrating life. You don't have to do things brilliantly. It doesn't have to be brilliant. You just have to engage in things and maybe enjoy the process along the road. I saw a wonderful thing. I posted it on my Instagram story actually recently, maybe in the last 24 hours, if it might still be up if you hear this today, about a study that was done, I think, in the 70s at a school in Japan, by a professor from the University of Michigan, comparing the way Japanese students learned, at least back then, to the way American children learned. And there was a kid who was trying to draw a 3D box or 3D figure of some kind, and he was really, really struggling with it. And so his instructor, his teacher, I think it was at elementary school, said, go and write it on the board, go and draw it on the board, and then we can like all sort of observe you and offer input, I guess, was the sense. And the kid worked at it on the board, and the whole class was hella like supportive, right? It became a group effort and they were very affirming and extremely celebratory when he finally got it right. And it was a good experience for everybody. There was no like shaming. The kid going up there didn't go up there with dread and shame, like, oh crap, I'm not good enough and I haven't nailed this yet. And now everybody's going to know. He went up there with the intention of now I can get everybody's input and help. And I think that's so beautiful, that community-minded idea. And also part of education and learning and life is about the process, not the outcome. It's about like, let's do this thing together. Let's engage. That's all. Just engage. And I loved it because I have so many horrifying memories of having to, a teacher assuming I knew how to do a problem and, being asked to work it out on the board and feeling under enormous amounts of pressure. What if I got it wrong? And then the whole class would jeer and laugh and think I was a dumb idiot, and then I was a failure at life, right? And the social sort of fallout from that. And that has stayed with me all my life, that fear of embarking on something, because if I can't know for sure that I'm going to succeed spectacularly, I don't want to do it because I am terrified of people judging me, and of, the fear of failure is paralyzing. It's not a good place to focus. So this is why we want to keep tasks small and manageable, and just give us ourselves so much celebration when we accomplish each bite, make each stage worthy of its own celebration and a standalone thing, and you'll get a lot further. I know I have. I've gone from being a hot mess to being able to navigate a fairly complex and intimidating interview process, which in the end I decided to look at as, wow, this is going to be a fascinating experience. I really want to see how these people negotiate this situation with me, these people who are in the same position I am. I want to see how they approach it, and I want to see how their minds work. And I'm just like grateful to have a morning where I can talk to like-minded, interesting people. And that really diffused the nerves and the overwhelm. And it was only after the interview where I sort of like the adrenaline came down and I started to think about it, and I was like, wow, that could have really, really done my head in if I hadn't have approached it like that. Of course, there were some nerves and I did prepare for it, and I was, somewhat anxious about having a bunch of unknown dynamics. But at the last minute, I was able to really center myself and go in there and just really with a bunch of curiosity and openness and gratitude and really just wanting to experience an experience with other people, my fellow humans, on this, spinning little rock. And not put so much stress in the outcome, not make it a whole competitive, angling, stressful thing. And I think that's when we really do shine best, when we're relaxed and we're not competitive and we're not preoccupied with a future outcome. We're just really present. That's really good for everything and everyone. So do what you want to do in life. Do what you want to do with life, in life, and stop wondering how it will be received. That is enormous. How good whatever it is that you want to do and what you are doing right now and engaging in actively, like engagement should be the point. How good it is in the end and how it's received is not really your business. The fact that you're actively engaging in it and not just letting it pass by and nag at you and make your life miserable in the not doing of it, that's the point. And then the outcome is just really not your business. So that's good for everything. Relationships, be present, be engaged. Then the outcome is out of your hands. And it's such a good feeling to have things out of your hands, isn't it? To just like be fully engaged, just be present for it, and then it's out of your hands. Awesome. That's really the reality of life. It's our illusion that it's not. We just dwell under the delusion that we have any control over things. And so it's just the recognition, really, really embracing the recognition of that will bring us a lot of peace and joy and allow us to do so many more things and have so much more fun. So that's my message today, you guys. Surrender to being mediocre. pay no heed to how things may be received. Stay present, enjoy things, and make them small and manageable. And let the doing be the point. Let the attempt be the point of the thing. What else did I want to leave you with? I think that's about all. I think that's enough for today. I hope that you will take a moment to just be present in your life, whatever it is, because that's what's happening right now. And I guess I'll leave you with one thought that I had, and it might seem pretty macabre, but I don't think it is. It's just logical. I was at the apple orchard with my kids. Somehow, serendipitously, they all were in town at the same time, and we were able to go and have our traditional orchard visit. And it was so fun to have everybody there. And I have a series of photos that I've taken over the years that we can compare the growth of the kids. And this year, it stunned me. It just really just stopped me in my tracks because I was very much aware that I'd received this amazing gift of everybody being there without a whole bunch of agonizing coordination, and the fact that people were willing to make time in their schedules, when they had a lot of other sort of things going on when they were briefly in town, was so great and so fun. And as I watched my children all walking away and with their significant others, and I just was like, I took this moment looking at them all standing on a bridge where we've taken countless photos over the years of them just really small and growing, and just realizing what a blur that all has passed in, and how quickly it's passed, and how inconceivable at the time it felt for us to be here so soon. I mean, that happens. People with grown-up kids are old people, and I will never be old is basically was my mindset this entire time. And now I'm like, am I old people? It's very, very weird. But I looked at them and I said to my husband, pay attention to this, look at this, because we're about to be dead. And I'm just like, dude, he's like, what the hell? Thank you for, that beautiful thought on this beautiful day. But I was like, no, for real though. Life moves in a freaking flash. It really, really does. The days are very long, but the years are hella short, and the eras are even shorter. And your time with these kids does, it doesn't feel like it passes quickly when you're with them, but then it's over, and you're like, the hell is going on? And I just had that same thought, like, look at this, appreciate it, be present for it, because you're about to be dead, because in like, you're going to be a grandma in a minute, maybe, if any of the kids choose to have kids, but like, you'll be the age of one. Looking back at this time, going, you were so young and it was only just beginning, or whatever, and now you're about to die. So yeah, I don't think that's macabre. I think that's just what it is. And maybe I'm finally reaching the age where I'm able to see, wow, maybe that's what middle age is about, when you're like, wait, so only if I'm lucky do I have as much time left as I've already lived. That is a freaking trip. And so there is really, I mean, I don't want to like inject a like an unnecessary layer of urgency into anything and freak people out, but it just is no time to waste being worried about people's opinions and outcomes when you could just be actively engaged in something that's interesting and stimulating for you. And sometimes you have to do a couple of like tedious things to get to that point. That is kind of another reality of life, but you may as well just do them and stop dreading them, because it's also tedious to be dreading them and to be wondering why. So, yeah, just go and do the damn thing would be my take. Unless you're very tired and burnt out, then the damn thing should be to rest and be bold enough to say, "Hey, world, I'm not going to do the damn thing. At least not for a while. We'll see. To be determined." So that's what I'll leave you with today. I hope you have a wonderful weekend and a wonderful week following, and I will talk to you anon. If you enjoyed this episode, please give it a thumbs up in whatever listening platform you are listening to. Maybe think about giving it a good review. If you didn't like it, you don't need to leave a bad review. I mean, you can, I guess, but I'm not gonna encourage it. But if you like it or you found any value in it, I would appreciate you sharing it with a friend. Thank you so much for tuning in, and look after yourselves. Bye.